You've seen the headlines. Bonds are making a comeback. But if you've ever tried to invest in bonds, you know what a clunky, complicated, broken experience it can be. That's why at Public, they took fixed income and fixed it. Now you can find, evaluate, and buy thousands of bonds with an investing experience designed this century. Add fixed income to your portfolio with corporate, treasury, and municipal bonds. Go to public.com/bondspodcast to get started. This podcast is sponsored by Public. Full disclosures can be found at public.com/bonds. Chat with Traders is sponsored by Trade the Pool. Are concerns about limited buying power, insufficient capital, or fear of losing your own money preventing you from advancing your trading capabilities? Trade the Pool is an online stock trading prop firm that offers funding for stock traders. Demonstrate your skills, trade their capital, and keep your profits. You can engage in intraday trading and now swing trading on Trade the Pool with any U.S. stock or ETF. The procedure is straightforward. Pay an evaluation fee, successfully complete the evaluation, and get funded. Visit tradethepool.com/chat to learn more.
Markets, speculation, and risk. This is the Chat with Traders podcast, hosted by Aaron Fifield.
Traders, thanks for joining me here on episode 232. And this episode is another trade recap. That means it's a shorter episode with the sole intent of analyzing step by step how my guest went about putting on a single trade, or rather, in this case, it's multiple intraday trades. And my guest is no stranger to the show. It's my guy, Nishant Purbandawala. Nish is a senior equities trader at Kirshner Trading Group in Austin, Texas, who's been active in markets for more than 15 years. As I alluded to, Nish has been on the podcast several times before, and each time it's been a seriously good episode. If you haven't heard these already, you certainly should. Check the show notes for links, chatwithtraders.com/232. For this trade recap though, Nish details how he booked an outsized six-figure profit trading DWAC, the NASDAQ-listed social media SPAC with ties to Donald Trump. The date was 22nd of October, 2021. The day it traded from $50 up to a high of $175. So that you have a visual aid to follow along while listening, Nish has provided a price chart with his executions. Again, you can view this in the show notes at chatwithtraders.com/232, where I've also summarized each of the main trades into a list. Hope you dig this one. I will now pass you over to Mr. Purbandawala. So let's break this down. This was an outsized winner for you. The first thing I'd like to ask is really about identifying the opportunity. So how did this stock get your attention? How did it appear on your radar?
No, the first time it appeared was on October 21st, the day before it. So some context to, and I'm sure most of your listeners would know of DVAC because it is the Trump SPAC that came out. Basically, they want to be the Twitter for the Republican Party or for Trump. And therefore, they became the sensation when it came out and when it, you know, merged with a SPAC. So many other people, not to get political at all on this, is that I thought this was, you know, pretty much BS. I was like, dude, you know, there's no way. And the way SPACs were moving that day, those days, like anything would move up, you know. So I'm like, oh yeah, okay, you know, let me just play it a little bit here and there. So let's start with October 21st when the news came out, you know, this company, Truth, which is what's called now Truth Social, is going to merge with DVAC. And so we start with the morning imbalance, which is at, you know, usually at 9:25 Eastern time. It was a million share imbalance, okay? And the stock moved up from that about 30 cents, opened at about $12.77.
Can I just pause right there? When you say there was a million share imbalance, can you just explain what that means?
So every stock has an imbalance. That means there's X number of buyers, X number of sellers. It's an auction that happens every day before a stock opens, right? To determine what price the stock should open. You don't really see, you know, I mean, you know, you see the opening print in every stock. That's an auction, basically. This, the amount of buy orders and the amount of sell orders equates to a certain price where the stock should open.
Okay.
Okay. So for a stock like this, which was a SPAC, every SPAC is at $10. This was opening at about $12.77, a million shares. I was like, I'm going to short the print because it's moved up on that imbalance. Basically, there's a million shares that wants to buy it. And I was like, you know, I don't think this goes too much. So I shorted 5,000 shares. As soon as it opened, it spiked about a dollar to about $13.77. I shorted more. I think I was shorting, I was in 20,000 shares by that. By then, I was down in the trade. It came back down a little bit. I was kind of flat. I said, let me just get out. This has done something more than it should have done. So I got out, I think kind of, you know, down maybe a couple of grand in it. And I said, that's not bad. Let's just forget about it and let's just see. Let's just trade the market. At 10 a.m. that day, it started moving up a little bit and kind of broke that you know, 1377 level, started pushing higher. I played in and out of it. I was like, you know, really, is this really going to go up? You know, it doesn't make any sense. You know, you have that. Everyone has a small bias end of the day. I was like, no, it doesn't make sense, dude. I mean, you know, not that Twitter was doing that well or anything that moment. So I'm like, okay, whatever. This is just a SPAC just for Trump and his way of, you know, because he was banned from Facebook and, you know, Twitter and this and that. This was his way of, you know, just putting his comments out there. I said, how can they make money? So, you know, you start thinking about all these things and you're like, okay, it doesn't make sense. So I traded in and out all day of it. By the end of the day, it closed at about $50. Okay. So, and I went back and I checked and I lost about 23,000 in this stock.
Okay. So that's day one.
Day one. Yeah. I think I traded about 150,000 shares in it, you know, in and out, in and out, you know, as it halted a few times also. And I'm like, you know what, I've totally messed this up. You know, I've thought about it and I have a bias. And instead of just trading the way it should have traded, I should just get my bias out and just trade it. You know, I don't want to like think about, oh, it's Trump's IPO, it's Trump's SPAC, or, you know, this is a dumb idea or any of those things. And then, I don't know, I remember one person talking to me, he's like, you know, the dumbest ideas go up the most. That's how the market was trading at that moment. Like, you know, there was dumb stocks that were going up like crazy, like SPAC especially. You know, these SPACs are now down like about 80 or 90%, you know, usually most of those ones like IRNT and all these different names. Anyways, that was day one, and that was the identification of the trade. Comes day two, which is October 22nd. I wake up early because I wanted to, you know, get some shares of the stock. The stock has gapped up to 70, 77 when I see it. I'm like, you know, again, a little bias is always there. So I'm like shorted like 200 shares just to watch it. I'm like, you know, this is pre-market. It's about 6:30 in the morning, Central Time. The stock goes up about 85. I'm like, you know what, let me get out, take my losses. Let me reconsider once closer to the open. So then I look at the open and I'm like, again, I'm seeing a humongous imbalance. And now the stock is capped up to like, you know, 80. As I said, there's a 1.6 million share buy imbalance, right? So there's 1.6 million shares that want to be bought. It could be market orders. It could be limit orders. It could be anything. But there's also sell orders on the other side. But the auction is such a way that right now, 1.6 million more buyers than sellers, right? And so it's going to find a price to open where 1.6 million shares get enough sellers to equate it to zero in a way. Make sense?
Yeah.
So I'm like, that's a pretty big imbalance and the stock has increased in price a lot. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to buy. So at about 9:25 Eastern time, about 6-7 minutes before the open, I start buying at, you know, I think 92, I buy some. I buy at 97, I'm buying some. stock is moving up and up and up. And I'm like in about 5,000 or 6,000 shares pre-market. I'm like, you know, okay, fine. I'm going to sell the whole thing as soon as the market opens. You know, there's a way to sell it at open. And so from the time I was buying at 92, the stock opens at 119.91 cents, right? So it opened about whatever 20 odd, 22, 23 points from where I got in. So I was up about, I don't know, I think I took out some profits while it was going up because it was going up so quickly. I didn't think that it would really, you know, that imbalance would actually stay. I thought it would actually get, you know, covered. So I was taking profits as it was going up. Also, I had some orders to, you know, on open to sell. So I did that too. So I sold at 119.91. So I think it was up like 60 or 70K by then on 5,000 or 6,000 shares. I know a friend of mine who was trading, he was in, I think, 20,000 shares. I think he was up like 250 just before the market even opened. Do we have a next question or should I keep going through my story?
Yeah. So let me just ask a couple questions. Your first trade when you were quite early to this, when you were shorting in the pre-market, is that something you do often or was this kind of an exception to the rule?
Oh no, I do trade a lot. I mean, especially the way the market was going on in October and, you know, all the way from like, you know, the COVID times. Waking up at like 5:30 or 5 in the morning was a given now because there was so much activity happening pre-market that you had to be awake. And sometimes, you know, if you want to secure shares to short, you would wake up early in the morning and just secure the shares that were going crazy, like, you know, small caps that were going crazy or, you know, stocks like DVAC that were going crazy. You wanted to go and, you know, secure them. So waking up early in the morning was something that we were doing consistently in the pandemic.
Okay. So I just want to maybe clarify, what were some of the variables for why you decided to go long the stock in the pre-market just before it did open there? Like, what were some of the key things which you identified, some of those repeatable factors that made it like a clear long trade for you?
Right. So, you know, it goes back to the day before when, you know, I knew that there was a million share imbalance. It had moved the stock a little bit anyways. So, and now the stock has momentum. It's, you know, closed at 50. It's gapping up. The imbalance is still there. You don't know exactly if it's going to open where. If it's going to open at 120, you're going to open at 100. But I'm like, you know what? This imbalance is going to push the stock to a decent level where I'll make some money. Right now, if I knew it's going to open at 120, it's going to open 20, 25 points up, I would be in way more shares. But, you know, at times, I mean, hindsight is 50-50, but, you know, usually if you see an imbalance like that, you're like, yeah, it's going to open maybe 3 or 4 or 5 points up. I didn't expect to open 20 points up from where I got in. So it was, that's why I took profits throughout that move up. In 5 minutes, I did take profits. I mean, I think by the end of it, I think I only closed about 2,000 shares at the opening print.
So talk to me about, I guess it's maybe trade two. It looks like the stock halted shortly after the open.
Yeah, I think it halted 34 seconds after the open. Yeah, so, you know, I got out of my shares at the open. I said, let me see what it does, because even yesterday, even the day before on October 21st, it opened and it spiked up, right? And I was going to be caught in the spike, so I won't short immediately, but I do want to short, you know, event, you know, in the end, you know, for sure. But I was like, let me just trade the stock. I don't want to have that bias, which I carried on day one. I said, let's just see what it does. Let's not think about anything. Let's just see what it does. And so in 34 seconds, it hit LRP. Do you know what LRP is?
No, I don't. I presume it's some sort of regulatory hold.
Yeah. So LRP is basically for stock moves X percent in, you know, and hits this level. Like, I think it moves 5%. And it's there at this level called the LRP, which is, you know, a point where it halts. If it stays there for 30 seconds, the stock halts. Okay.
Okay.
So it's a moving average of 5 minutes. 5 minutes for 5%. So if it moves in that period 5%, it halts at this level. But it has to be at that LRP for 30 seconds. So as soon as I hit the LRP, I said, I'm just going to buy it because there was so much buying in the starting. And it was going up. And I'm like, okay, fine. I'm just going to go with the trend. So I bought it. And I bought, I think, 3,682 shares.
Okay. So did you buy it thinking that knowing these rules for when the halts occur?
Oh, yeah.
Presuming that there was soon to be a halt?
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so that was kind of the trade there. That was kind of the idea.
Like, if it's halting, I'm going to go with the trend, you know.
Okay.
I didn't know what's going to happen after that. Usually on halts, like it's an up halt, right? So usually on up halts, you usually don't lose money that much. So, you know, it's like maybe it can open down a little bit at times or it can open up a little bit. Right. So you take a 50-50 shot. He's like, you know what? Let's just go with the trend and see what happens. So that's what I did. You know, as I hit LRP, I said, you know what? I'm going to add as many shares as I can, but I don't want to be in too much size because just in case it, you know, if it goes against me, I don't want to lose all the money I made in the morning. So let me just, you know, get in as much as I can. So if you see the number I got, it was 3,682 shares. So I was trying to get in more. But, you know, you have 30 seconds to try to get in and the whole world is trying to get in at the same time. So it's not like it's an easy way to get in, but there are tricks and trades of how to get in.
You've seen the headlines. Bonds are making a comeback. But if you've ever tried to invest in bonds, you know what a clunky, complicated, broken experience it can be. That's why at Public, they took fixed income and fixed it. Now you can find, evaluate, and buy thousands of bonds with an investing experience designed this century. They started at the beginning, reimagining the bond screener with an intuitive design that helps you zero in on the exact kinds of bonds you're looking for. Then they made it easier to evaluate each investment opportunity with better data in the places you need it most. Finally, they made investing in bonds as straightforward as stocks or any other asset. Add fixed income to your portfolio with corporate, treasury, and municipal bonds. Go to public.com/bondspodcast to get started. This podcast is sponsored by Public. Full disclosures can be found at public.com/bonds.
Are you a developing or seasoned day trader who trades the U.S. markets? Is the only thing stopping you from getting to the next level is having enough capital to trade? Trade the Pool is a unique online stock trading prop firm that funds stock traders worldwide. Not having to risk your own capital can help you focus on other things like making better decisions on your trades. There's no PDT rules to worry about. You got more than 12,000 stocks and ETFs to trade, long or short, and professional tools at your side. How you get funded is you show them your skills through a straightforward evaluation process. Once you pass the evaluation, you get funded and trade with their pool of money and split the profits. Don't let the lack of buying power, capital, or fear of losing your own money prevent you from taking your trading to the next level. Visit tradethepool.com/chat to learn more.
Hans, sorry, can I just interrupt you?
Yeah.
Again, I don't trade these markets on an intraday level, so some of these nuances I'm not familiar with, but I presume that's probably the case for quite a few of my listeners as well. So if you said that the stock was going, you could see that by the way it was trading, that there was going to be a halt occurring shortly. But you said there was a 30-second window for you to try and get in. What's that 30 seconds relating to?
Well, let me explain. I didn't know it's going to halt up, right? As soon as it opened, the stock went up, right? So in 34 seconds, it moved up to the LRP. LRP is a point. It's called liquidity replenishment point or something like that. You know, I forgot the real name for the abbreviation. So if it hits that point and it's there at that point for 30 seconds, the stock halts for 5 minutes. Okay.
Okay.
So basically it hit that point, and as soon as it hit that point, I'm like, I'm gonna start buying at that point for the next 30 seconds before it halts. So I bought 3,600 shares. And this was at 131.90. That was the price it was trading at. Now it opened at 120, so it went 11 points pretty quick. in 34 seconds. So it was like just open, zipped up, halted, right? And then the imbalance came in for the halt, because again, you need an auction to open the stock. And if the stock is opening above 5%, it takes 5 minutes. If it's opening 10%, it takes 10 minutes. And if it's opening anything above that, of 15 or 20%, it takes about half an hour sometimes. I've seen sometimes an hour go by and the stocks don't open when it's really opening up.
Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. So the halt's completely dependent on the imbalance.
It's completely dependent on the price it's going to open.
The price, yeah.
So if it's going to open 5% up, then there is a 5-minute halt. And if it's 10% up, it's a 10-minute halt. And anything above that, usually it's like, you know, could be 15 minutes. There's no real science to it, but this is approximate what usually happens. So I was in it, and then I see all these buyers, you know, piling in, trying to get in, obviously, but the stock is halted. You start seeing an imbalance that's formed, right? So basically what it's saying is that there was a buy imbalance of 1.4 million shares. So there was 1.4 million shares that had to be bought or wanted to be bought as soon as the stock opens, right? They're basically market orders. They could be limit orders. They could be whatever kind of orders. But this is how much they want to buy as soon as it opens. And I'm already long in this stock. So I'm waiting for the stock to open. And the way imbalances work is that they start printing a price where the auction is meeting right now. So, you know, it started at like 200, it went to 180, went to 190, went to 165. So it was halted for about 30 minutes. And then it opened at 175, which was about 44 points up, right? And so I'm actually thinking of, okay, I'm going to short the print, but I didn't want to short a lot of the print, right? So it could open in 25 minutes, it could open in 20 minutes, it could open in 30 minutes. We don't know exactly. So you keep putting orders out in case if it opens and you can get it, right?
Yep.
So anyways, it opens right there. So that was my big money gain out there.
Okay. So hold on, let me just interrupt you. So you're talking about considering shorting the stock now. So I presume that once it came back online, you sold your long position?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And that was purely just because of the size of the gap?
Yeah. I'm like, you know, if something gaps 40 points up, it's, you take that profit.
Sure.
And, okay, you know, if it halts again up, you can always get in maybe a little bit and try that. But I mean, I know like that's a pretty big gap, you know, and then this morning it was trading at 80, it's trading at, you know, nearly 100% up. Obviously things can go even more north from there. You know, it's all possibilities, but then, you know, you just have to take what you see. As I said, I won't have a bias when I trade this. That's what I told myself. Anyway, that opens and I think I told myself I'll take 500 shares short just to see if I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, I'm going to get out immediately, right? But it opened at 170, or I think 175, and straight hit an LRP down. So the stock fell 5 or 10% pretty quickly. And I tried to short some of that LRP down too. But I didn't get enough because it's very hard to get in, because I think everyone was selling at that point, or I don't know what. But sometimes it's hard to get in at LRP. It's really hard. So sometimes you get lucky, like the way I got for 3,600 shares. On the way down, maybe I got like, you know, I think 700 or 800 shares. And then it just, you know, went lower and lower and lower and lower and halted, I think, maybe 3 or 4 times on the way down. And for me, the trade was kind of over then. After that, it's just like, you know, trading with, you know, a few hundred shares here and there, in and out, trying to see if, you know, which way it would go.
Okay. So let me just, before we go into that part of it, you know, this big trade, so the short, I know you said you didn't get as much size on for the short trade, but it does look like you were kind of adding to your short through the halts on the way down, or leading into the halts on the way down. I mean, is that where the majority of your money was still made? Like, did you get enough size on to...
No, I think the majority of my money was made on that gap up of 44 points, because the gap gotcha. Downs on the halts were like maybe like 6 or 7 points down. Like, they were not like big down moves that you would see. It didn't gap down 40 points. I think it gapped down really slow after that. Like, it gapped down like every 3 or 4 points after that.
Okay. So how were you trading it on the way down? Because it looks like you were obviously, you were shorting more, shorting, covering, etc.
Yeah, I was shorting and covering on every halt till it didn't work out, you know. I think it went all the way down to like 90 and then bounced back up to like 115. So like, you know, if you were wrong in any of these moves, it's like it's a 10-15 point move and it's really quick. And so it's like, you know, you just have to know that like the main trade is over, because the move up is done, the move down is done. Now it's, you know, it's going to be range bound. It can be up, it could go down, it could go up, it'll go down. I don't want to put size on that, at least. You know, I don't mind trading it with, you know, with a lesser size, just because, you know, you're a compulsive trader.
I think what you said there is the main trade is over. I think that's like a really key point that a lot of, you know, less experienced traders don't really accept as much. It's like sometimes when you have such a huge move or such a big event like that, right, it's like that was the trade. You know, if you miss that, whatever follows, the opportunities aren't as great. There's not as much edge in participating in the moves that follow, you know, like
right,
the trade's done.
The edge is gone. You're exactly right. The edge is not there. After that, the edge was there when things are going crazy. After that, it's still crazy if you look from a macro perspective, but mm-hmm. the micro perspective, you know, it's become less crazy. And, you know, it's like, listen, now you can, you know, poke around here and there, but you can't give away, you know, half your day, or you can't give out even 1/3 your day. I would give back maybe 10% of my day playing around something like this. That's the max I would give back. So that's where your risk management, you know, your profit taking, you don't want to give back too much because the main trade's over. And it, similar concept as GME, you know, there's one day when GME went to like, you know, 400 odd pre-market and then opened and did its, you know, hits up and down, and then, you know, suddenly, you know, had a few up moves and then it crashed down, and, you know, and then it just halted and halted and halted and halted every time. And then you're like, you know, once it halted and goes back up, you're like, you know what, majority of the trade is over. You know, now on, you know, you have to really, like, you know, choose the amount of size you really want to put for a quick day trade, you know.
I guess just a couple questions just to reflect on this trade. I mean, the way that you were sizing, you did share how many shares you bought and sold at various points during these trades. I mean, how were you determining your position sizing?
I mean, in a situation like this, right, it's like when you're at LRP and when you're trying to buy a halt, sometimes you don't have an option to choose the size you want because it's what you get. It's like, you know, everyone is trying to buy, so it's how much you can get in that situation. So that on those LRPs, it's all about how much you can get. You know, when it comes to the pre-market trade that I did, I thought that because it's become an $80 stock, I didn't want to be more than 4,000 or 5,000 shares, because if you're wrong, you know, it can go against you very quickly. You know, at the same time, if the imbalance disappears, if someone comes as a big sell, and, you know, and that auction goes to zero, and there's not a buy imbalance as it was before, then getting out of, you know, of a big amount of shares could be worth at least, you know, 4 or 5 points on the other side. So I wanted to keep, you know, in the 5,000 range, because if I'm wrong, then, you know, I lose about, you know, 2 or 3 points getting out. And that's what I wanted to be, because I lost the day before in that stock. So I didn't want to, like, you know, again, give back more money in that stock.
Another question for you. After the big gap up where it opened, came back online after the halt at 175 or 175, what gave you the confidence to short it there? I know it had gapped up a huge amount.
Yeah.
But huge is obviously always a relative term.
Relative, exactly. I mean, I've done this before in GME and, you know, I've got screwed in it where it's, you know, I was long, it gapped up and then it again halted up, you know. So So basically, when I'm shorting, so I only short at 500 because I'm like on my keyboard ready to get out. I'm like, if this goes against me, 2 or 3 points, I'm out, right? So you're supposed to be really quick on it because the idea is very simple. Like if it doesn't hold down, you're getting out. There's no other question in my head. I'm like, if this doesn't gap down, I'm getting out. So it's basically I'm already doing a delta up. Like, you know, I'm already like delta 2 points up that in case if I'm wrong, I'm going to get out, whatever happens. So I'm not marketing, but I'm doing a delta order. So let's say the stock is trading at $300 right now. I'm putting an order at $302 to get out.
Okay, so you'll sweep the book up.
I'll sweep the book up if I have to.
Gotcha.
You know, because okay. I need to get out because everyone is going to sweep the book. Everyone's going to market order on that, you know, kind of stuff. So it's like you want to be first to it.
Okay. Just to summarize here, and we'll wrap this up in a moment, but what things did you get right here and what things do you think you could have done better? Obviously, hindsight, as you said, is always 50-50, but you know, just doing a little bit of reflection here, what are some of the things that you're pleased that you did and you feel like you got right, and maybe some of the things you could have fine-tuned a little bit next time?
So one thing I think I got right was the bias part, right? Like I realized on day one I was biased on the stock. I'm like, this doesn't make sense. This is just, you know, how can a stock like this go up? You know, I'm not in that kind of crowd either, you know, that would buy a stock like that. So in my head, I was like, yeah, this is just, you know, something that's going to go up 15-20%, come down. So you have that bias in your head. And second day, I'm like, you know, let me just trade the stock the way it should be traded. Let me just trade it instead of like thinking, oh, this stock should be valued at this price right now or that price. I'm a day trader. I'm looking at what's going to happen in the next 10, 15, 20 minutes. I don't care what's going to happen in the next 3 or 4 days, you know. So let me just trade that day, that moment, and see what the stock is doing instead of me trying to put my bias first. Like, you know, and you see, and you learn from, you know, moves like AMC and GME that, you know, when you have a bias, it doesn't work out. You know, we all knew, even the smartest or the dumbest person on the street, that GME is not worth 400 or AMC is not worth 60 or 70 or 80 or 90, wherever it went to. And you can see that today in the stock market when AMC is trading at what, $15, right? $18 right now. So you know that, but then, you know, you don't want your career to get over before you can short that stock when the time comes right. So I'm glad that bias part was good. And so let me just trade the stock instead of trading what I think the valuation should be or where the stock should be trading. Let me just trade the stock. What can I do better? I don't know. You can always do more size, but it's easier said than done. I think on an imbalanced trade at the open, I should have taken some more size for sure. I don't know, because, you know, I've been burned before by buying halts that have gapped up, I've been burned shorting halts that have gapped up also. So it's like, that's like, you know, it just happens so quick, Aaron, that it's a split of a second decision, you know, and as traders, you do make it. And sometimes, you know, you get right and sometimes you get wrong. So if it's going to hold down, you just want to be your key, you know, you make the right keys and the right quickness to be there. And then that's where I think I would have an edge over someone else does, because we have the right keys and the right exchanges and, you know, things like that to get those LRP prints at times.
When you say the right keys, what do you exactly mean there?
Just like, you know, like I'm saying, you know, if I was wrong, I would use a delta key to get out, you know.
Okay.
The same way there are keys that you can make that you can be quicker to get to the LRP, that you can, you know, it's tough to get filled at LRP because it's like, you know, many people are selling out there too. Because, you know, everyone realizes that, oh, the stock has gone up crazy and, you know, they want to make quick profits. And it was, you know, the retail craziness was still going on that time. So there was so much volume and retail trading that was going on. It's a lot of things that goes on, but yeah.
All right, Nish, let's leave it there for now. Once again, or as always, it's awesome to have you on and share your wisdom. So I appreciate you doing this. If someone wants to follow you on Twitter, maybe, would you like to give out your handle?
Yeah, my Twitter handle should be out there, I think. But it's Nishant82. And people always find me somehow on Instagram too. And they find me on Facebook somehow too. And they keep messaging me on how to get become a how do I apply to the company that I work for. Let me tell you guys, I have no way to do that. So just apply to the company directly.
Okay. Don't hassle Nishant.
No, you can hassle me. You can ask me questions, but it's tough to really coach someone through text messaging. I feel that's really hard. I think when you show me a chart of a stock that you've traded and I can help you with something like that, but how do I become a better trader? I'm like, I don't know what kind of trader you are in the first place. So it's but I've spoken to a lot of your listeners, a lot of your listeners call me, I've spoken to them. I'm always open to helping people out because that's how I became a trader too. Someone helped me out. So, and it's the best job in the world, especially if you love it.
Yeah. Oh, it's very good of you. All right, Nishant. And again, I appreciate you doing this. Once again, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. Until next time.
And I just want to give you kudos because, your podcasts are one of the best podcasts. Even as a senior trader, as someone who's traded for 15, 16 years, I still listen to each one of them. And,
oh, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, so I suggest that everyone who's young and upcoming or even a senior trader should listen to your podcast because I think you learn something from someone always.
Very kind, very kind. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron.
You've reached the end of this episode of Chat with Traders. But rest assured, there are more episodes loaded with real market insight and zero hype on the way soon. So to stay updated with each great new release, subscribe to the podcast in iTunes. And we'd love it if you'd leave a rating and review. We'll catch you next time on Chat with Traders.